Very good evening and welcome to this Biz News Briefing. It is Monday, the 18th of November, and we've got a full show for you. We're starting with Clem Sumpter. We will get a scenario from him on the latest news out of the US, where President Biden has given the Ukraine the go-ahead to launch low-range US missiles into Russia. Could that be prompting World War III? We certainly get the lowdown from Clem Sumpter. We'll also be speaking to Faan van der Walt, the CEO of We Buy Cars, that company reporting full-year results today, and a great showing from We Buy Cars, remembering that they listed on the 15th of April earlier this year. We'll also be looking at Naspers process coming out with a trading update and PPC out with interim results. Chatting to Gigi Alcock, who is the author of Carsonomics, on the big story that continues to gain traction in South Africa, and that is foodborne poisoning. Definitely the impact on the township economy, getting that from Gigi. And then we'll also get commentary from Neil de Beer on former ANC Secretary General Matthews Pauser's book and his thoughts on that. So a lot in the show. Let's take a quick look at the markets to start. And on the international front, starting with those indicators, the S&P 500 index just up almost 0.5%. The NASDAQ almost 1% stronger. Bitcoin tracking above $90,000. And the Dow Jones is just slightly lower at this stage in US trade. On the local market, a very, very strong showing from resource stocks, with the JSE Top 40 Index 0.2% higher, resources climbing 1.7%, industrials 1.5% stronger, financials also closing in the positive, although slightly. You've got the rand dollar tracking at 18.04 and the pound rand at 22.79. Just some of the big moves on the upside today. It was a strong day across the board. Goldfields up almost 5%. Telkom 4.75% higher. Pick and Pay climbing more than 4%. And of course, we've got that Boxer listing ramping closer on the 28th of November. Amplats is up almost 3.5%. But let's start with our big story, and that is the news that Biden allows Ukraine to strike Russia with US-made long-range missiles. Here's Clem Sumpter on the probability that this could trigger a third world war.
Well, it's the red flag, which covers actually three countries, Russia, China, and North Korea. But in the case of Russia, it's all about the Ukraine. And obviously, with Biden announcing that long-range American missiles can be used in Russia, does raise the possibility of a third world war. When I wrote the book Flag Watching in 2015, I actually posed this scenario when Putin had just annexed Crimea and was moving into the eastern provinces of Ukraine. And I said that, you know, Russia sees the advance of NATO eastwards as a threat, and that ultimately this could lead to a third world war. Now, you know, obviously a lot of people will say, but this is just, an extra step. But you have to remember back to 1962 when Russian missiles in Cuba were pointed at the United States. And there was a real prospect of a nuclear conflict until John Kennedy actually stepped back and reached a deal with Khrushchev. And the whole thing simmered down. And so, you know, Russia is just as sensitive about American missiles as America is about Russian missiles. So, you know, that's why you have to play this scenario associated with this particular flag. And it's not that the probability is very high, because we all know about mutually assured destruction, and that, you know, any nation that launches missiles at another nation of a nuclear kind faces the prospect of its own cities being destroyed. But nevertheless, in warfare, there's always random things that happen and which ramp up the kind of intensity of that war beyond what is expected. And we are at one of those moments right now.
When you say not a high probability, what probability are you putting to a World War III scenario?
No, well, I still think that it's very low in the kind of 10 to 20% kind of probability, and that common sense will prevail. But it's certainly higher than it was before Russia annexed Crimea and then moved in on the Ukraine. And I have to say that Russia in the last few days has really ramped up its attack on Ukrainian cities and its energy infrastructure ahead of winter. And apparently today it's just hit Odessa again and some residential buildings in Odessa. So, you know, Russia is ramping up its aggression too. So both sides are, you know, taking the war to a higher level, and that's why you have to watch like a scenario planner. It's just like 9/11. There was a flag that we talked about called the religious flag, in a book called The Mind of a Fox, which I wrote with Chantelle Ilbury, and we actually included a letter to George Bush, and we published this book in June 2001. And we said the principal flag that he had to watch was a massive terrorist strike on a Western city. And it happened 3 months after we published the book with the bombing of the buildings in New York. And so that's the whole point of this process. It's not that you're forecasting the future, but you're raising a flag saying the risk has risen. You don't know when it's actually going to be turned into an event. It could be 3 months later. It can be a year later. But at least the probability and the risk as a result of what Biden has just said about using Ukraine using American long-range missiles in Russia, that has ramped up the probability of a very nasty outcome.
How are you expecting President-elect Trump to engage on this matter?
Well, I don't know how, you know, he's so unpredictable, Donald Trump. I mean, he's made the statement that he'll solve the Ukrainian war within 24 hours. He is a person who gets on the phone to other leaders in a way that Joe Biden has not done so. There's been a terrible silence between Joe Biden, Xi, and the Chinese leader, and Putin. But you know, Donald Trump is much more willing to pick up the phone and chat about life. And if you remember, in his first term, he even met Kim Jong-un on the bridge between North and South Korea, and they had a chat. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what Trump is going to do when he becomes president, but I'm sure one of the first things that he'll do is get on the phone to Vladimir Putin.
Additional flags that we should look at in this regard, Clem, what are you looking for in terms of those elements that will drive the scenario planning one way or the other?
Well, you know, I have a portfolio of 11 flags that I've been doing webinars and talks around for the last couple of years and written some articles around. You can't have too many flags because that is a distraction. But probably the most prominent flag I've had over the last 2 years is the religious flag of a possible conflict in Israel as a result of the intensity of competition between Judaism and Christianity and Islam. And indeed, 3 months after I put this flag top of the list in an article in June 2023, it happened with the terrible attack by Hamas on Israel. And it is a flag that has to be watched because, obviously, the Middle East is incredibly important in the world at large. And I'm afraid to say at the moment, I don't see any prospect of, you know, a long-term solution. There may be a ceasefire But you know, I don't know what the long-term solution is going to be. Israel is a very small country, but the kind of wreckage of Gaza in terms of human life and property, and now what is going on in Lebanon, means that it's very difficult to see a prospect of a long-term peaceful settlement at the moment. So again, it's a flag that has to be watched on a daily basis. But probably the most existential flag that I have in my list is the green flag of climate change, which has quietly been forgotten because of these two human conflicts. And yes, we've just had a COP meeting on climate change, but there you have Trump saying he thinks it's a myth, and he may walk out again of the Paris Agreement. And I simply don't know where this is heading. The last kind of interchange I had with some really top climate change scientists in the world, and this was about a year ago, they talked of atmospheric rivers where you would have a much greater density of rainfall over a particular area, because not only were the clouds holding more moisture because of the increased heat, but that the upper atmosphere was getting channeled, and you'd have a kind of a river channel. And you've just seen that happening in Valencia, in Spain, where this had been this incredible storm. And this is going to happen more and more around the world, along with obviously very extreme droughts, because that's what climate change is doing. It's creating more extreme weather patterns more frequently. And this issue has just really sort of gone again back on the back burner because of all the kind of conflictual situations we have in the world between human beings. And so it is an existential flag, this one, because our children and our grandchildren must be allowed to grow up in a world that continues to be rich in diversity of fauna and flora.
10 to 20% of World War III. Not a comfortable stat at all. You can catch more with Clem Santa, which premieres, that interview premieres, at 8 o'clock this evening on Biz News. Now, in other news out today, We Buy Cars came out with full year results. That company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange on the 15th of April, and the share has been a raging success. The stock today closed slightly lower on the day, and the company has about 10% market share in the second-hand vehicle market. We caught up with the CEO of We Buy Cars, Faan van der Walt, and got his take on the results released today.
It certainly has been a whirlwind this year with us listing, unbundling, and all of that. That being in a difficult trading environment for the motor industry, where we saw new vehicle sales in a slump, interest rates, you know, sticking for most part of the year. So consumer confidence was certainly not there. But throughout this all, We Buy Cars managed to put out good results, and that we are very proud of. It's a collective effort. We have a fantastic team. So yeah, it's a good growth story. We also opened one new supermarket throughout the year, and as we announced today, quite a few also in the pipeline.
Well, let's talk a bit about the few in the pipeline, because it does look as though you are expanding your supermarket, so to say, across different regions. Your funding coming largely from existing debt and cash. Perhaps just talk to me about how you are going to roll out and whether you will need additional capital given the aggressive rollout, if I can put it that way.
Well, it's business as usual for us. You know, we've always grown, and we've always took on responsible debt to fund the growth. So it will remain in more or less the same ratios. In fact, as we put out in our results, we we're actually at lower debt levels right now than where we were a year ago. So we're very fortunate that we are a highly cash generative business, which funds the growth to a great extent. So nothing will change in this regard. You know, I really like the fact that we can keep as much funds as possible within the business and use that to grow, because that's what shareholders want and that's what I want. You know, we still got a long way to go to grow market share. Our aim and our ambition is to where we're currently sitting at approximately a 10% market share of the used vehicles traded in South Africa. We certainly can grow that to beyond 25,000 units per month let's say within the next 5 years at least. So
you mentioned at the outset of our conversation the tough consumer environment. We're still beleaguered by high interest rates, although it does appear that the down cycle is going to gain traction from here. But the consumer isn't going to feel any respite in the short term. Are you still confident of navigating what will continue to be a tough environment as we go through the next 6 month period?
Yeah, it certainly will remain a tough environment. There are some positive signs out there. We track for instance, the number of visits to our website closely, the number of online applications, finance applications, etc. So we can definitely sense a movement happening there. What positions us well, you know, for difficult periods is the fact that we do not only trade in a small segment of the market. You know, most players prefer dealing in 1 to 5 year old vehicles. And it's always been like that. We serve the whole car park, meaning there's 11 million cars in South Africa on the roads, and the average age of that vehicle is just over 9 years. So regardless of the age of a vehicle, We Buy Cars has the ability to determine a fair value on each and every vehicle and offer that service to the seller. So whilst in the newer space and the more expensive space, yes, there are constraints, you know, that forms only a small portion of what we do. So yeah, we have proven ourselves to be resilient, you know, even in tough economical times.
Aylett and Co. are holders of We Buy Cars, and earlier I got a quick comment from David Sachs on We Buy Cars' performance.
Yeah, I think they pretty much did as we expected, and I'm sure as a lot of people expected. It's not a difficult model. You can tell us, you know, what the average cost is per car, you know what the number of bays are that they have, and you know how often they turn it. So you just had to have a little bit of a view on those three, and the costs are quite easy to predict. So kind of came out where we thought. And it's quite interesting to see how it's re-rated since they listed it, 6 months ago?
Is it too late to get into the We Buy Cars story now, do you think?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. I think the easy money has been made. I think, you know, there was a little bit of a cloud over transaction capital. The listing was done at a time that was probably not the best for We Buy Cars. They'd just come out of a reset of the used car pricing, sort of a bit of a, over the December period, they had to move a lot of cars quickly. So they had a bit of a low base in the results. I think what's happened now that they've listed, people have started looking at it a lot more closely. They've started to realize it isn't a traditional motor retailer. It's not a low PE business. It's a growth business. And it's re-rated appropriately. So I think from now on, it's about earnings growth. That's where your return's going to come from, not from a re-rating.
Dagan Sachs, thank you so much for joining me from Aylett and Co.
Naspers and Prosus issued a trading update today, and both shares rallied in earlier trade. Naspers closing 0.75% higher, and Prosus down just 0.25%. The company continues to generate profitable growth, particularly in its consolidated e-commerce business. I caught up with Arthur Buchner from Courtney Capital and got his stance on Prosus and Naspers going forward.
Well, it's become a favorite of every South African asset manager. You know, I had a discussion this morning with someone who said, oh, should we buy China? I said, why do you want to go and buy Chinese shares when you can buy a stock which is already trading at a discount to the Chinese shares? And if you look at Prosus and Naspers, yes, Prosus has outperformed Naspers over the last 5 to 6 months. So it's just rectifying that little imbalance where the discount to NAV changes. But the biggest thing to understand about Prosus, they announced a big increase in earnings. They're buying back shares every single day. And we worked out that over the term of a year, they're going to buy somewhere in the tune of 132 billion rands worth of shares. And every share that they buy back at a discount enhances their earnings, because instead of buying it at par value, they're buying it at a 30 to 40% discount. So we expected them to show an increase in earnings. And as they continue to buy shares at a discount, these earnings will increase even more. So what they do with the second line of parts of the business where the earnings are going to come through, and whether those parts of the business which have invested a lot of money is going to actually drive earnings. But going forward, Prosus should increase earnings by anywhere from 20 to 30% per annum purely on the share buyback.
So if we cut to the quick on it, is there value to be had in buying either Naspers or Prosus at current levels?
So I think people are still putting on the spread. People are buying, and I'm talking about us as fund managers. We are constantly putting the spread on. We are buying Prosus. We are buying Naspers. We're selling 10 cents. We're hedging out our currency. We think they're going to unwind all of those discounts. I think Naspers at the moment is trading somewhere around 4,000 and the NAB is 7,000. It just makes absolute sense to buy things that are selling at discounts with a growing earnings per share. So we will continue to put that spread on, and we will continue to be overweight in Naspers and Prosus, even though it sounds like we're all screaming from the same parapet, and sometimes that is wrong. This one is just too good for us.
Well, PPC also reported interim results today, and that company in the throes of a strong turnaround. The stock closed up just 0.25% higher. And of course, we're watching for their full year earnings as the cement maker continues to execute on its turnaround. In other news out today, on Friday night, Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation on foodborne illnesses. And this has direct implications for spaza shops and informal traders that now have 21 days to formally register with their municipalities. We also heard further that the military and the SAPS will be conducting regular investigations across the country. I caught up with Gigi Alcock, who's the author of Kazi Economics, for his take on the situation.
I think one of the sad things is that we're kind of confusing spaza shops and this food poisoning. And it's become quite clear that the food poisoning has come from pesticides and insecticides that are sold to households and obviously used in spaza shops and so on. And, you know, I think that, and I'll come back to the spazas, but the point is actually where the focus should be on getting rid of these insecticides and pesticides that are sold. I mean, I can show you lots and lots of pictures that are sold on tabletop hawkers, even on street kind of junctions. We're selling these terrible pesticides and insecticides. And that's actually who we should be cracking down on and getting rid of those as a starting point. And by focusing on spazas, we're actually taking away from actually focusing on those. And so, you know, the whole reason we're registering spazas, you know, registering spazas isn't going to stop them using an insecticide that they're purchasing or someone in their home using a pesticide. And I think that the tragedy, we're losing the opportunity to narrow down on those insecticides and pesticides. When it comes to the spazas, I mean, I think that, again, there's spazas and there's spazas, you know. So we have, you know, the little hole-in-the-wall spaza that might be dirty and not very hygienic. And then we also have supermarket-type spazas. And You know, again, I think we're combining all of these, and the assumption is that there was never a law before to register spaza shops. Of course, all these bylaws have existed before. All the health requirements and so on have always existed. They just haven't been they haven't been enforced by municipalities, and so this, the real issue is actually, you know, do we have a capacity and are we able to enforce those? And why weren't we doing that beforehand? You know, now it's really just a PR exercise to kind of Cyril to look like he's actually doing something about something that they've never done something about before. So
in her Sunday show regular with United Independent Movement leader Neil De Beer, Chris Steyn asked Neil about his thoughts on former treasurer of the ANC, Matthews Pause's book, Never One to Be Shy on Words. This is what Neil had to say.
Okay, Neil, let's go to the book written by former African National Congress treasurer, General Matthews Pause.
Chris, they always say the game, the story, or the ideology is not done until the fat lady sings. I don't care. I've been making her sing for the past 20 years. By continuing in various debates on various platforms over two decades to say that it was very clear that the now deceased Colonel Muammar Gaddafi was one of the biggest financiers of the ANC and in specifically the Zuma era. The amount of money that was poured into this country by Gaddafi and then what was called the Libyan Foreign Fund was so obvious, it was in your face.
What do you think they're going to do about it, Neil?
Well, they're definitely not going to pay back the money, because at the end of the day, I think there's too much money that has to be paid back by too many people. In my opinion, they're going to do the true South African waltz. They're going to shut up, they're going to deny, they're going to act stupid, which will not be difficult. And they're just going to wash their hands and say, the man is dead and you have no proof. That's what they're going to do.
As always, that full interview with Neil De Beer, leader of the United Independent Movement, is available on BizNews TV. Earlier today, Chris also spoke to retired intelligence officer Colonel Chris Wyatt and asked him whether there's any truth to the perception that Elon Musk is, in fact, in a position as co-president with Donald Trump, with President-elect Donald Trump. This is what they had to say.
I wouldn't lose any sleep over Donald Trump being steamrolled by Elon Musk. Donald Trump is his own man. I think he's proven that time and time and time again over the past 40, 50 years. So Musk may be making a lot of waves right now, and that's irritating some folks. But we saw the same thing in the previous administration, where people who weren't famous and incredibly wealthy but had a lot of influence inside Trump's inner circle really irritated people. And that's one of the reasons why John Kelly now has become a treasonous book writer or commentator, the former chief of staff, Marine General, who is telling secrets out of house. And that's the last thing you do to your former boss unless they've committed a crime. And Trump didn't commit crimes. He just didn't do the things John Kelly thought he should do. And so now John Kelly thinks he's the expert. So I wouldn't lose sleep over Elon Musk being overbearing. You will see that if he is being disruptive in a way that Trump doesn't like, he'll be pushed backwards a little bit.
Again, that full interview is available on BizNews TV. And that brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing for Monday, the 18th of November. Alec Hogg is back in the hot seat tomorrow morning, tomorrow evening rather, at 6 p.m. sharp. And that full interview with Clem Santer is available as a premiere this evening at 8 o'clock. His thoughts on whether Biden is in fact triggering a third world war. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.